the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 27th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioArian.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, how are you doing today? I haven't seen you for a week. I had a week off last week. How are you doing anyway?
It's just really hot here, and this half hour is usually pretty painful. But I think somehow I'll make it. I'll live. Maybe if I go silent, you know what's going on.
We appreciate your sacrifice in not having the aircon on. We all have to put up with the heat while we're recording podcasts this time of year. Anyway, we're going to get into a subject that we've talked about a little bit before here. Trump's trade wars. We've concentrated on China and we're going to be concentrating really on India today. But just before we get into that, Matt, you're aware that Donald Trump is now putting sanctions on the investors on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, European investors.
Well, I knew that was going to happen. I didn't know it actually occurred. We've talked about that on this show quite a bit, that the law says that if you're involved in any country that has sanctions on it, that economic activity is going to be sanctioned too. In other words, this declaration of war on anybody who has anything to do with the world's largest economy, which is China, which has many sanctions on it, and Russia, of course, this is number seven. In that sense, it's a complete disaster. Tariffs are okay. Tariffs make a certain degree of sense. Sanctions are a completely different story.
Well, these are European companies. I mean, this is Nord Stream. I mean, Germany can't do without that gas. Germany does need gas, and people have invested in it. It does seem a little bit below the belt to then start sanctioning them. I guess that's a story that we'll probably end up covering next week. It's just broken today, really. But we're going to talk today, as I say, about India. But first off, we've got a little bit about China, and this quote actually comes from the Daily Stormer, and it's about the Ford Motor Company. And Anglin says, imagine being the CEO of a major corporation and being told by the government that companies who outsource manufacturing to foreign countries will be penalized. What would you do? A, start closing down foreign factories and bringing jobs back to America for fear of the incoming tariffs? B, try to plead with the government and strike out some kind of deal. Or C, flip the finger to America, close down the remaining factories and open up shop in China, hoping for the best. If you answered C, you might just be Ford executive material. You also might be just about to go bankrupt. So which of the two is it, Matt? Is that good for Ford, or are they about to go bankrupt?
Well, it seems as of right now that they're looking for exemptions, that they're going to the Trump administration saying, we're not going to be, brought into line this quickly. We're a globalized firm. Globalization is here to stay. And that's all there is. Now, these tariffs, by the way, have exemptions all over the place, but apparently not the exemptions that they're talking about. Ford seems to be willing to lose money for the long-term goal of maintaining a globalization. And the other option, of course, the simple option, is to simply reinvest in this country, which is the point of tariffs in the first place. The rationale of tariffs is that you make a foreign product expensive, not so that someone has to pay more money for it, but so that that market, which now has a gaping hole in it, gets filled by someone else. And that's the point. But now you have people who are so ideologically motivated. Economic rationality isn't the issue here, except in the very long term. They're not going to give up their globalized system. They're not really free to do that. So they're willing to shut down an entire line rather than simply come back to the United States.
Their loyalty is to globalism then more than money. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, the issue about, you know, the focus active, which they're willing to cut the entire line, which, of course, is exclusively made in China, to eliminate the entire line rather than just bring the factory back here. And they're willing to lose money on that. They're willing to fight Trump in the short term, hope maybe either they can get a concession from him or that he'll lose in the next election and more congenial people will take over. You know, everyone's against Trump on this. You know, his general agenda is correct. There's only one way to punish these people, and that's with money. But, you know, he has to know that these people, money isn't the only factor. There's long-term market issues and ideology and other things like this that they have to worry about. And as of right now, they're willing to fight him. They're willing to, you know, they're willing to demand an exemption, decide what rate they're going to pay, or and if worse comes to worst, to shut down the entire line and not have it at all. And that's something that I did not expect out of this, and I don't think Trump expected out of this.
Well, you mentioned just then the focus active, and that's in the next quote, which is from The Verge. Ford just announced that it is abandoning plans to sell the Focus Active, which the company makes in China, in the United States because of tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. The car was supposed to be one of two models that Ford planned to sell in the US going forward as it shifts its lineup to be almost exclusively SUVs and trucks. Now the only car Ford will sell in the US is the Mustang. In 2017, Ford decided to build the new Focus in China after it abandoned plans to move the production of the car from Michigan to Mexico. The Mexico assembly plant had been publicly criticized by Trump, who was still not sworn into office at the time. But instead of acquiescing to pressure from the president-elect and keeping production in the US, Ford decided to build the Focus in China, a decision that reportedly saved the company around $1 billion. The Focus Active will still be sold in other parts of the world, Ford says. Most leading car companies operate on a global scale, and production plants are increasingly being placed in areas where costs can be kept low. GM, General Motors, one of the only other major automakers that currently imports Chinese-built cars, has also warned that it might stop importing the Buick Envision SUV if the company is not granted an exemption to the tariff. So this is where these exemptions come in. General Motors are expecting an exemption. Why would Trump give them an exemption? Are they correct to be expecting one of these, Matt?
Well, this is simply how they are. I mean, this is when you have this level of power, you cannot believe that there's a president who is going to punish them for abandoning this country. Now, the decision that saved them $1 billion, now that comes from their paperwork. I strongly doubt that, because what they forget is that in investing in America, in creating all those jobs and building, you know, new factories and new towns that have been abandoned before, that's going to earn them a lot more money down the road, especially if it's done by many other companies. This is about revitalizing the manufacturing base of the country. So that's a bogus claim, you know, and it shows you that these tariffs really aren't about Chinese goods. This is aimed at American companies who go to China, take advantage of coolie labor, and sell the product back to Americans at the same price that they would sell it if they were, you know, made in Michigan. So the whole thing's a scam to begin with. And what they don't realize is that in the long term, reinvesting in America would mean far greater savings, a far greater market, and a far more healthy society.
But that would mean going along with Trump, wouldn't it? That would mean supporting Trump. And I dare say there's a lot of animosity towards him, personal animosity that's in there as well. And I see we talk about India here, and India appears to be responding to this, I would suggest, in the right way. This comes from Sputnik. Trump calls on India's Prime Minister Modi to withdraw US targeted tariff hikes. India has imposed tariffs on 28 US products, including apples and almonds. The country remains subject to US tariffs on steel and aluminium. The United States imposed 25% tariffs on imported steel and 10% tariffs on aluminium in March 2018. India immediately condemned the move since the country is one of the largest steel producers in the world. However, India's retaliatory duties were postponed six times in view of the trade dialogue between the two countries. I mean, that's got to be hurting India pretty harshly if it's one of the largest steel producers in the world, wouldn't you say, Matt?
Yeah, see, there's two different targets here. On the one hand, he's targeting these American, you know, companies that abandon the country. And on the other hand, he's going after these sectors that used to be American. People forget that India is one of the dominant steel. Well, the U.S. used to be one of the dominant steel producers. It built, you know, places like where I live here in Pittsburgh. I see the empty factories right from my front window. They're still there. That's what he's doing here. I'm a nationalist. Every country has to look out for itself. The Indians are complaining. This has ripple effects. But ultimately, he wants to bring steel back to this country. He doesn't want India selling cheap steel here when American companies can reinvest and rebuild the country. That's the situation here. This is a sectoral question.
Well, hang on a minute. This is sort of out of what we're really discussing here. But wouldn't it be helpful for the environment to be America to producing the steel rather than India and the third world producing the steel, where they don't have the same environmental concerns and where the majority of the damage is being done to the environment is through industrialization of the third world? So surely that would fit in with people's environmental concerns as well to have that move back to America. We've got a quote here from a World Bank consultant from India. He says, there can be an analogy drawn between the policies of Donald Trump and Narendra Modi. Trump was getting into trade wars with various countries, but Modi has retaliated with a tit-for-tat measure. It is a rebuttal to the GSP, the Generalized System of Preferences, withdrawal for India. The US has over the years enjoyed enormously low tariff benefits with India. Thus, the message sent out by India is clear. Do not treat us like your subordinate country because we are not. India has its own national interest and it can't be bullied to not look into it. The US should keep in mind that India has always been a friendly country and there are 6 million Indians living in the US. Why was that 6 million figure put in there? Why should it matter how many Indians there are living in the US? Is he threatening America with all these Indians, you know, that are living there?
I've read that now three or four times, and it just occurred to me that that's an ominous quote.
Yeah.
Remember, we were friendly with you up until this point. If Trump is serious here and he really is about rebuilding manufacturing, rebuilding the economy the way it was when the US was actually a prosperous place, and actually produce things, then I don't care what India said. He says right here that we're searching for our own interests. That's the case with the U.S. too. There's no grounds to complain. The Indian response would have to be, okay, we have to build our own domestic market for the steel rather than taking advantage of the destruction of the steel industry in America. You know, I mean, I've gone back and forth here because, you know, I hate the liberal American system. And on the other hand, if Trump is honest about rebuilding this, then you can't help but cheer for him. Now, I don't know how honest he is or if he's even going to be reelected. But as it stands for right now, all of these countries, all of these industries are going to be – now, steel is rebuilding. All throughout parts of Pennsylvania and Missouri, factories are going back up again because they don't want to be involved in this anymore. You still have a highly skilled workforce in this country. And you're right. Environmental controls are far stricter here than they are there. And maybe short-term costs might be higher, but they're only thinking short-term. Rebuilding an entire country, rebuilding an entire manufacturing base, that will benefit everybody. And that's his ultimate goal, I think.
Well, a nationalist economy is better for everyone. Right from down in the smallest situation where you want to be self-sufficient at home, you want to be growing your own vegetables, creating your own stuff, being self-sufficient, right up to the country itself wants to be self-sufficient so that it's not relying on anybody else. It's producing the best of what it can make for its people. And it just seems logical to me that the economy should be run on nationalist principles, and these tariffs, they're going to be encouraging that. They're going to be encouraging India to produce enough steel for itself, and obviously encouraging America to start bringing the manufacturing back there. So they are positive on that front, but they are also doing harm to the American economy. And this report comes from Paul Craig Roberts. He says the profits from jobs offshoring are short term because jobs offshoring is based on the fallacy of composition. The assumption that what is true for a part is true for the whole. An individual corporation, indeed a number of corporations, can benefit by abandoning its domestic workforce and producing abroad for its domestic market. But when many firms do the same, the impact on domestic consumer income is severe. As Walmart jobs don't pay manufacturing wages, aggregate consumer demand takes a hit from declining incomes, and there is less demand for the offshoring firm's products. Economic growth falters. When this happens, the solution of Alan Greenspan, the Federal Reserve chairman at the time, was to substitute an expansion of consumer debt for the missing growth in consumer income. The problem with his solution is that the growth of consumer debt is limited by consumer income. So what's that saying there about debt, Matt?
Well, we talked about the specific cases of, Ford and steel and China and India. Now we talk about what underlies it all. And the U.S. economy was hollowed out through globalization. This is one of the reasons we're nationalists, because internationalism is primarily an economic movement. Once the U.S. stopped producing things, mass layoffs, from 1970, family incomes have gone down, especially seven-eighths of the layoffs in America since 1970 have been male, heads of household. It's a destruction of a lot more than just an economy. What he's saying here is when good jobs, good manufacturing jobs, and the nature of that economy that it creates goes away and you destroy entire towns, the only way that they can maintain consumption levels is to expand debt. So just as this is going on in the 70s and 80s, you introduce credit cards and tremendous consumer debt, which is now as big as the federal debt. But that just means that all that money is being drained into debt service and interest payments. And that hurts the economy. So it's nothing but a short-term measure. So it's so irrational that, yeah, Ford may see some quick profits in the short term. But the economy that they were born and raised in has been hollowed out. And how long can you charge everything on a credit card? The U.S., most of the U.S. economy is based on financial services. That's not a physical thing. It's completely dependent on the rest of the world, and the American market is completely saturated. This is an extremely dangerous situation. If Trump is honest here, then he's trying to reverse the process that Paul Craig Roberts is talking about.
What they need to do is pay people more money and get more people employed so that they have more spending power so that then the economy will grow, because the people that are employed will be spending the money on buying the products that other people that are a part of the economy are making. And that's why you need a nationalist economy, which isn't built on debt, which is what the global economy is built on. The reason why I was saying that this drawback to this comes up in this second paragraph here. Much of America's post-World War II prosperity and most of its power are due to the US dollar's role as world reserve currency. The world gives us goods and services in exchange for our paper money. In other words, being the reserve currency allows a country to pay its bills by printing money. A person would think that a government would be protective of such an advantage and not encourage foreigners to abandon dollars. But the US government, reckless in its arrogance, hubris, and utter ignorance, has done all in its power to cause flight from the dollar. The US government uses the dollar-based financial system to coerce other countries to accommodate American interests at their expense. Sanctions on other countries, threats of sanctions, asset freezes and confiscations and so forth have driven large chunks of the world, Russia, China, India and Iran into non-dollar transactions that reduce the demand for dollars. Threats against Europeans for purchasing Russian energy and Chinese technology products are alienating elements of Washington's European empire. So this is the drawback to this, Matt, is that the dollar could end up being dropped by all of these countries, and there wouldn't be the, you know, there wouldn't be the funds then to rebuild the manufacturing in America. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a tight balance here. It's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a game that he's playing. He's certainly, you know, making some hefty bets that he's going to win. Because if he loses, I mean, this could really harm America. Is that what this is saying here?
Well, you're exactly right. It's well, what Paul Craig Roberts is saying, he's making a historical argument that when you don't produce anything, a country then has to use debt. But even if you have a globalized system with the U.S. heading it, you know, and everything is based on the dollar, you can't do what the U.S. has done over the last 25 years. The constant threats, the sanctions on everybody, sanctions on sanctions on sanctions. And now, as you mentioned before, sanctions on major European firms. Now, we've mentioned on this show 1,000 times that the Germans and the French are refusing to listen to American sanctions on Russia. They have longstanding investments there. They're not going to abandon them because they're told to. So that means, and this is not a theoretical matter, it's happening. The dollar is being abandoned. Russia and China have already agreed to that. Now, India is thinking about it. They have this huge, and I've been trumpeting this since the day I got started. Crushing the dollar is crushing liberal dominance, crushing globalization. That's great. But it's only great if at the same time manufacturing is brought home. So it's a huge gamble on his part. He's going up against the biggest corporations in the world. He's going up against essentially the entire Bilderberg crowd, all the media. You put in Google, Trump sanctions are working well, or something like that. You'll get not a single positive response. Everything will be negative. And usually it's very illiterate, what you hear. So clearly there's an agenda here that globalization is under siege. And I guess what they're gambling on now is that he loses in the upcoming election.
Well, that would appear to say that that's encouraging for us. You know, if the mainstream media are really against his sanctions, then, you know, probably there is something in it for us if they are against it, I would suggest. We've got a final quote here. And again, that comes from the Daily Stormer. The headline is, as the US continues to spiral into insanity, even Japan is becoming best friends with China. We are at the point now where every single country on earth that has the ability is trying to get the hell away from the United States, because it has simply become too obvious that this country is spinning out of control and nothing short of a biblical apocalypse can result from it. Japan moving to become friends with China is a massive, massive thing. These countries have been at war with each other since the 7th century, and the Chinese and Japanese people can't stand each other on an individual level. The greatest impetus for warming Sino-Japanese relations is their realization that China and Japan need to cooperate with each other more closely in the face of their changing relations with the United States, said Victor Teo, an assistant professor in the Department of Japanese Studies at the University of Hong Kong, speaking to the CNBC in an email. Is he speaking the truth there, Matt? Are they going to take any notice of that and start getting friendly with China, do you think?
Well, I've mentioned on this show before that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization made peace between India and Pakistan. Now they're making peace between Japan and China. All of this is to fight American liberalism and globalization. So that's how severe the reaction against the U.S. is. What Paul Craig Roberts is saying, that when you have such a delicate balance of everyone using your dollars, you can't act like this. But the U.S. has become so arrogant, is now so bankrupt, the local market is so saturated, no one trusts the dollar anymore, no one trusts the U.S. anymore, no one trusts the government, not just because of its leadership, but because it's mostly private interests anyway. So these guys are absolutely correct here.
Well, we've got a final quote here with a few more analogies from Andrew Anglin. Furthermore, these countries can simply look at what is happening to our country domestically. The mass immigration, the drug addiction, the trannies, and see that we are running off the rails. It's like being friends with a guy who is sinking further and further into alcoholism, getting into fights with people, crashing his car, and beating up his kids. And you just know that if you hang around too long, a disaster is going to happen, and you could end up being damaged by it. Well, what is the solution to this, Matt? Do you think it's a good idea then that these other countries stop using the dollar? Is that actually going to help America, do you think?
It won't in the short term, but it will in the long term. Because what will happen then is that the U.S. will do what Russia has done since 2000. It'll focus on the domestic market. It'll adjust to a domestic market. Russia is one of the most self-sufficient countries in the world. She imports very little. Russia, the U.S., maybe China, a few countries that can actually be self-sufficient. Globalization is a complete failure in every way, however you look at it. But now the example here, I've always used the idea of a guy who used to be a multimillionaire, who lost all his money, but he still shows up to work every day ordering people around as if he has all that. It's some one pathetic figure or another. That's the examples that we always use here. And that's what the U.S. is. No one gave the alcoholic example is absolutely true. We can't be involved in it. And the fact that – and don't forget something else. Japan was the failsafe for the dumping of the dollar. The plan was if Russia and China dump the dollar in any large amounts, more than they already have, the Japanese are going to buy it up. Now, if the Japanese and the Chinese are becoming friends, they may not do that. That means the dollar will collapse. And if Japan and China become allies, then really all the U.S. has is England as the only ally in the entire world that it could count on, because Japan usually was the other one on the other side of the world. So this is a disastrous thing. But if anything, it proves that Trump's gamble makes a lot of sense, but he's got to win in the next election. It's got to be a long-term thing, and he's got to scare the crap out of these companies. Putin and Russia has been doing this for a long time. Whenever any one of these big firms wants to move abroad, he personally goes there and makes sure that they don't. And the argument is solid. This is only for your short-term profits. Long-term, you're better served by building the economy that you were raised in here. Not to mention the fact that it's our people, European people, who created all of this technology. Outsourcing is a complete disaster. It's a short-term profit-seeking, you know, the most ridiculous, irrational policy you could possibly do, because it hollows out the local economies. Putin's job since 2000 has been to make Russia self-sufficient. That's why sanctions don't matter. The U.S. is going to have to go through that same adjustment, and hopefully that is going to be the billionaires who don't have to pay it.
Well, America has plenty of resources. It is quite capable of being self-sufficient, the same as Russia is. And because the dollar, I mean, it's not backed by anything. I mean, if it does get dumped, I mean, what are the rest of the world going to do? Are they going to make war against America? They can't do. America is the most armed and well-defended country on Earth. So even if that does happen, I would suggest America could still rebuild itself, even if the dollar does, you know, if it does get dumped and these countries stop using it and it loses its purchasing power, what is that going to matter? I mean, am I right in thinking this, Matt?
I've been saying since college that the only way that things are going to turn around for the long term is a sharp economic collapse. Now, maybe the U.S. doesn't have the internal cohesion to come back from it. Well, that's our job. That's what we're supposed to be doing, building that cohesion. In the first Great Depression, it was one thing. We had a very different American society, very different British society back then. Now there is no cohesion at all. So even if you have this opportunity to rebuild, we may have the economic resources, but do we have the demographic resources? Do we have any ideological or racial unity here that can, you know, during the Great Depression, you had people who were in rags, but they would make sure to wear a tie before they went out and looking through garbage dumpsters. These standards were still very, very high. You had a fanatically strong sense of ethnic cohesion there compared to today. But we don't have that today. There is no America. There is no ideological cohesion here. So even if there is the opportunity to rebuild, you know, I fear that the U.S. simply isn't in a position to do anything about it, that there's simply too much abulia, too much lethargy, too much self-content. But I could be wrong, and I want to be wrong about it. But this isn't 1929 anymore.
It's ethnic loyalty that's needed, isn't it? I mean, we had a depression here in Britain as well. But at the time, I mean, the people were very, very patriotic, and they still had their racial loyalty, and they went off and they fought wars. I mean, really, there should be an alliance between America and Britain, but it should be based on race. It should be based on a shared language, a shared heritage, the English settlers that went out there to America, and the two countries. I mean, the destiny does seem to be tied up together. As you say, England would be the only friend that America has left, and this banking system as well. I mean, you can see it falling in Britain. I mean, the pound sterling, that's not backed by anything anymore either. That's not backed by gold. But if there was to be a collapse, so long as you have that racial integrity there, then you can rebuild things. But in a multicultural state, it's going to be hard. It is going to be hard. Anyway, it's interesting stuff to look forward to, Matt. Definitely. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan at Radio